Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Welcome back to Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. You guys can probably guess what this is. This is our next installment in the position group breakdowns. I've been joined throughout this whole task with the intrepid Ian Boyd. I call him the contrarian Ian, but he's not just a contrarian. He's also got great ideas that far too often we've been agreeing on these breakdowns, Ian. We need to find some stuff to disagree about, even if we have to manufacture it just for the drama. Are you down?
I got it. You ready?
Okay. Oh no. Is it a bad play on words?
No.
Okay.
When I was like 15 or something, I thought the Dodge Intrepid was so cool and would be like a really awesome car to own someday. Do you remember that Dodge Intrepid?
Oh, I remember the Dodge Intrepid because I drove it.
Did you have one?
When I worked in biotech, that was my company car. And I wrecked it driving up to Dallas to interview candidates for a district manager. I was a manager at the time, and I was driving up to Dallas to interview candidates for a manager whose wife had gone on maternity leave, and he couldn't make the interviews for his own position. He was hiring a sales rep. So I was driving up there in a crazy thunderstorm, and I was going over a bridge, and the water accumulated, and basically my Dodge Intrepid was not so intrepid. It started hydroplaning. Even though I was going 45 miles an hour or whatever it was. And I basically narrowly missed, I did the correct things you're supposed to do in a hydroplane. You know, you don't steer against the skid, all that stuff. But I narrowly missed an 18-wheeler that would have T-boned me. And then I went into the median and I like took a deep breath, and then an SUV pulled up right behind me. I grabbed my stuff, got out of the Intrepid, and this guy walked up and goes, "Hey man, I just saw that. Do you need a ride? Where are you going?" And I was like, "I'm going to Dallas." He's like, "Cool, just jump in my SUV. I'll take you to your hotel." So I grabbed my stuff, jumped in their car. The two little kids in the back seat were like, "My dad saw you hydroplaning and he said, this guy's dead. And the dad's like, shh, oh no, I'm just kidding. I was kidding. And so the guy, you gotta love Texas, man. This guy sees a car hydroplane, almost get T-bone, you know, obviously I banged into a barrier. That's the car got kind of messed up. And then I just grabbed my stuff, grabbed my suit covered in like a little plastic and my toothbrush. I had some change and like a thing of some CDs to give you an idea of the time this occurred. I had some change in the middle console that I took, grabbed my CDs. I just got in this guy's car. And then as we're driving, I called my fleet department because it was a company car. And I said, "Hey, there's a Dodge Intrepid, you know, crashed outside of Waxahachie. Go pick it up. I need a new company car." And that's my little Dodge Intrepid story. Yeah. And I can't say that I thought my car looked cool, but I remember being very excited that it was an upgrade over my Ford Taurus.
Oh, I'm familiar with that one. I think what happened is when I was a kid, we got a Intrepid on a lease rented one when our car got wrecked.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say your dad leased an Intrepid. At least be a Dallas credit card millionaire and lease a Land Rover Defender, right?
Yeah, we rented it because our like Dodge Caravan got broken or something, and I was quite taken with the Intrepid.
That's good stuff, man. Yeah, it was an elite vehicle. Let me tell you,
I drive a Dodge Intrepid.
That's right. All right. Well, let's talk about the guys that we need to perform, and they can't be hydroplaning at any point this year. And that is the Texas offensive line. The big uglies up front. Do you think offensive linemen ever get mad being referred to as the big uglies, Ian?
No.
No, they just accept it.
Doesn't seem like it.
Honestly, so offensive linemen, from a dispositional standpoint, are your most balanced athletes on the football team.
Maybe in sports.
Maybe in sports.
You're talking like mentally balanced?
They have a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
They're self-deprecating. A lot of offensive line arguments amongst the offensive line is who's the fattest, who ate the most at the buffet, who's the stinkiest. They're very self-deprecating. They have a pretty realistic understanding of their ability levels relative to each other, to other teams. They're kind of the most honest guys on the team, typically, and typically the most emotionally stable.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Offensive linemen, you know that they're playing. Once you get to a certain level, you know that they're playing because they love football.
Yes.
If you're not, there's other positions where you might play because, well, I'm good at it. Or I like
there are I like there the are coach. A bunch of dudes in the NFL on the defensive line and linebacker drawing NFL paychecks who don't really like football.
Well,
but they yeah. play it because they're amazing athletes, right? And they can get paid to do it and change their lives, right?
Yeah.
I think most offensive linemen like football.
Yep. There are exceptions, but just
there are
a really good general rule. There was a guy for the Colts I heard about that like signed this big contract and then just like started not really putting in the work from then on. And I heard him, Ethan Strauss was talking about it on one of his like podcasts, and his teammates would like try to pester him and be like, dude, what's up? He's like, I don't care. I got my money. I don't care anymore. Maybe why their line cratered after they drafted Ellinger. Like, it looked like he'd been drafted into the ideal situation, right? It's like they got all these great linemen. They got Jonathan Taylor. This is awesome. He can like take some time. And then every time he's gotten a chance to play, it's like, you know, jailbreak at him.
If Sam was the leader that you claim, Ian, he would have talked that guy out of that funk, and it would have gotten an all pro caliber performance out of him. So that just shows the weakness of Sam as a leader, Ian.
I guess so.
I'm kidding. All right. Let's talk about what should not be a weakness for the football team in 2023, and that's the tackles. That's the bookends, Ian. And we're talking specifically about Kelvin Banks and Christian Jones as starters, and we'll talk about some of the reserves, or key reserves at least. We're not going to go exhaustively on every single offensive lineman for obvious reasons. Kelvin Banks and Christian Jones could not have had more different developmental cycles. And Kelvin Banks was a revelation as a true freshman. Christian Jones, when he first saw the field 3 years ago, became something of a curse word amongst Longhorn fans. And Kelvin Banks, I think, is going to continue to improve and probably end up in the NFL draft pretty high. Christian Jones has played himself into the NFL draft, just showing that you can improve over time. So who do you want to tackle first and talk about?
Let's do Kelvin Banks.
All right.
What is Kelvin Banks' ceiling, you think, in terms of draft prospect?
The year after next.
25 draft, I think, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I think his ceiling, top 8 pick. What do you think?
I feel like he could maybe top 3.
Maybe. You know, honestly, it's tough because it's a relative. I mean, all drafts are a relative drafting of value. So I mean, what's the tackles, quarterback class look like? Right.
It seems like tackles get valued up there, like really high. But I did notice that the Steelers got that Georgia guy, Broderick Jones, I think, right?
Yep.
At like in the teens, I think. And when they showed his clips and when I recalled what I'd seen of him, I thought, like, that seems like almost like a steal for a huge guy that is that explosive. But anyway, he's almost a lock for the first round. If he doesn't have some, like, well, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, don't say it.
But, you know, he's got so much natural power and agility.
Mm-hmm.
He obviously knows how to apply it very easily. It's going to be hard for him to slip out of the first, I think. Like, that's just so special.
I think technically he's the best true offensive left tackle I've personally seen that I can remember. I haven't seen a more slick, put together 18-year-old playing left tackle against multiple future NFL first round draft picks. And against several, he held his own. Against a couple, he won. I mean, he won the matchup. So
Eric Nolane had him as the best guy in the state. I thought that was like a little bit generous. From his high school film, I just didn't see. I mean, he didn't pass block a lot in high school. So I didn't realize how freaking easy it was going to be for him to master that skill so quickly.
Yeah.
Eric sniffed that one out somehow, probably from seeing him up close or something. But
yeah, he nailed it. And from a object or more objective, I guess, just statistical standpoint, Pro Football Focus, who can be hit or miss in the college game, but when they have rankings, I do pay attention to them just to sort of see if it checks out with what I see or marries to what I've seen. They rated Kelvin Banks the sixth best tackle in all of college football in pass protection. Pretty unbelievable as a true freshman left tackle, considering also who he played, because they don't control for opponent strength, right?
Yeah.
They're just grading blocks, and they're not, you know, not many tackles were going against Felix Anaduke Asamoah, Will McDonald, Tyree Wilson, freaking Will Anderson. I mean, some dudes, man. And none of those guys embarrassed him. That's for sure. I will say one thing from an NFL perspective. We can kind of drop that and just talk about 2023. He may be graded down slightly by some of the teams that have hard measurables at offensive tackle. Or at different receivers. You know, so for example, do you know that there's certain franchises that if you're not over 6 feet tall, they won't draft you at corner.
If you
don't weigh 100, I think it's 200 pounds, they won't draft you at wide receiver in certain franchises. But offensive tackle, some franchises have a 6'5" and
he's
then
the
arm
bad
length.
Ones.
Yeah, exactly. But I think some will be like, oh, he's not 6'5" and a half. He's not 6'6". You know, he's probably 6'4". You know, it's probably how I measure out. But
I've been shocked that Texas Sports, from his freshman year, they're like, he's 6'4".
Yeah.
Normally
Usually you lie.
Yeah, you just give him the inch. They don't care.
Yeah.
They're like, he's 6'4". You're going
to
want
him. They should just list him at 6'1" to screw with people. That'd be great. All right, so what do we like about Kelvin, and what can he get better at? I've got one thing he can get better at.
We like that Texas doesn't really have to worry about pass protection on the perimeter that much.
No, sir.
Jones is better. He keeps getting better. He'll probably get better again this year. We'll talk about him in a minute. But you can always shade help to one tackle if you have like an island right on the left side. Texas has actually maybe been a little better at that over the last 10 years than you would think from their abysmal records, but it is such a luxury to have that. I mean, that's such a, anything that they want to do, like whenever we talk about all the things that Texas could do or should do this year in the passing game with Quinn Ewers back and more experienced, you don't really have to worry about like, well, but what about tackle? What about edge? Whatever. It's fine. Kelvin Banks.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, He's about as good as it gets at college football in pass protection.
Yeah.
And so I'd say the thing he can improve is an aspect of run blocking. His total run blocking is pretty good too.
Yeah.
I thought he was particularly good against smaller guys who often will give offensive tackles trouble because they can sort of matador them. They'll Olay them. But he's got such great feet and he doesn't lunge. You know, Kelvin Banks never lunges. He plays within himself, as they say, right? He doesn't get big and try to extend himself. He always brings his feet and he's always bringing his power. So he does a really good job on linebackers. He'll run down guys in the secondary. You know, they can't run around him. Where he can improve, then it's an obvious thing he can improve in, which makes sense. He just needs to get stronger so he can go head to head against mature, big, 290-pound four eyes or, you know, a 300-pound tackle and he's got the block down, right? Or even a big physical defensive end. You know, Tyree Wilson was a big, strong dude, right, out there on the edge for Tech. I think he can improve that, and that just comes with time and maturity. So literally the only thing I think he can improve, he will improve simply by getting older and lifting weights.
Yep. Yeah, I noticed that when he was going for like a second level target.
He's great.
Outstanding. You know, yeah. Like to your point, he's not gonna run into the Conor McGregor counterpunch. He's always on it, but he doesn't always if last year, if I wanted to stop the Texas run game, I would put a big guy across from him so that he would get tied up at the line of scrimmage and not be able to go pick off, you know, whoever. That's like the one thing. I'm curious to see how that goes for him. I'll say, you know, Connor Williams was not Kelvin Banks as a pass protector in year one, but he was a road paver pretty quick, even against. Well,
he had amazing feet.
Yeah.
And so he would take guys and turn them just with his feet. Now, he was great at that. Let's talk about Christian Jones. He's had 35 career starts, Ian. And I remember every single one of them. Because the early ones, it was like, oh no, Christian. And then it started to be, oh, Christian. Oh, yes. And it took time. And we, you know, if you guys need a refresher, he was late to football. He didn't play till I believe his junior year of high school. And he had actually more played defense than offense. And in fact, he was recruited. He was a three-star player, but he was recruited pretty heavily by some out-of-state schools at defensive line, not offensive line. And it was not the intent of, hey, let's tell him he's a D-line and we'll switch him. Like Justin Wilcox at Cal wanted him to be a D-line. He thought he was like a good 3-4 defensive end. So that's interesting. Speaks to his athleticism.
And
Christian.
Not only that, but when he did play offense in high school, it was like in a wing T.
He never pass blocked.
Yeah.
Which you could tell when he got to Texas. The other thing is Christian is on the first guy off the bus team. He is every bit of 6'6", 320. And you don't see a lot of 320-pound guys who have flat stomachs, but that's Christian Jones. And complete stud. I don't know if you've seen him interviewed, Ian, but he's like a really nice guy, super bright, good teammate, a guy it's very easy to pull for. I have some stats from my Thinking Texas Football preview, and I thought I'd just run them by you. He had 1,411 snaps as a sophomore and a junior, and he played both right and left tackle, if you'll recall, as a sophomore and junior. In those snaps, he gave up 34 hurries, 7 quarterback hits, and 9 sacks. 2022, he plays 811 snaps and allowed only 9 hurries, no quarterback hits, and 3 sacks. And I think I remember all 3 sacks. And all 3, I think, were on inside moves.
Yeah, still.
So that is his weakness.
Yep.
Explain to the good people what an inside move is.
So the offensive lineman, when he's going up against a fast guy on the edge, he's like, I got to get back I can't just let him go right around me. And Christian Jones was not very good at kick stepping backwards and getting in front of people. Like, you watch him, like, 2020 in year one, Oklahoma had Nick Benito across from him, and it was just like a layup line to the quarterback. Yeah. It was bad. If you overcompensate, though, and you start dropping back too fast, too hard, then a skillful, coordinated edge can then turn back inside on you and then take the short path to the quarterback, which is worse generally.
Yes.
that has been his weakness for maybe the entirety. So this is his fourth year in a row starting, right?
Yep.
I think that has been his weakness the whole time. I think in 2020, he would alternate between getting beat outside and getting beat inside. And then after that, it was a little more inside. And he's gotten a little better and better and better at it. I wonder also if last year, if they kind of like knew that and they instructed like Cole Hudson, like, you got to be there for him inside a little bit.
Yeah, so Christian Jones actually, he has given up inside moves on a redirect, but he actually gives them up often as a stunt right at the snap. So in other words, the defensive end is lined up on his outside shoulder, and the guy just comes across his face inside, and Christian's not expecting it, and he doesn't react to it. That's one of the rare moments in a pass block where actually you need to be aggressive. And the proper thing you do is you engage that guy and actually drive him like it's a run block, and you put him on his ass, right?
Do you remember the Franklin sack on Ewers where DJ Campbell? That was actually one of those.
Yep.
And I don't know that Christian Jones did DJ Campbell any favors with disrupting the inside path by the end. Not to say that Campbell looked like he had no idea what was going on. So
we'll talk about Campbell in a moment. Okay. So back to Christian Jones. One thing that he's really good at is he's become a dominant run blocker, particularly against mobile or quick edges. So usually those guys, they can give up some ground, but it's tough for big guys to stick on them because these are quick-footed guys, and they're able to sort of get away or squirm or turn sideways, and they break the block, and then they use their speed to go pursue the ball, right? Christian Jones has a facility for locking those guys up, getting a fit underneath their pads, and literally, there's multiple highlights of him driving dudes 15 yards down the field. It's, you know, if you like the classic Roschon Johnson hurdle touchdown against Baylor, the thing to watch there is Christian Jones grabbing Al Walcott, who is their super nickel, and basically taking him downfield 20 yards. And in the process of doing that, so not only do you drive a dude, right, but what the value of driving someone off the line of scrimmage is that you cut off all the backside pursuit. So not only did Christian Jones dominate his guy, he prevented probably two or three Baylor tacklers from getting over and possibly getting a piece of Roschon Johnson and, you know, preventing the touchdown. And so he does that a lot. He's done it multiple times, and it's an asset. So I think Texas has the best pair of tackles in the Big 12. I think they have probably a top five duo in the country. And I think it's been a while since we've said that.
Yeah, it'd be like Tony Hills and Justin Blaylock in 2006 would be the last.
Yeah, when Blaylock was so good, he was dominant at tackle and guard, and he played both. And I always forget which years he played tackle and which years he played guard.
I think he was at tackle in 05, definitely 05, I think in 06 too.
I
could afford to play him at guard after.
I remember him in 05 because he's mashing a dude on the Vince Young touchdown run.
Also, they had, they only had Studdard, but they had
Jonathan Scott.
They had him in 05. In 06, they had
Will Allen,
Dockery.
Dockery, Derek Dockery.
It went Hills, who was an NFL talent at left tackle.
Oh yeah.
Hills, Studdard, Sinline, Dockery, Blaylock. That was probably the greatest offensive line Texas has had. It was 2006.
Yeah, they were good.
It was basically the 05 line with an upgraded guard, and then they lost Scott, but Hills was very, very, very good. And at the end of the year, he got hurt, and I think they had to replace him with like Chris Hall, and it was not as good. But
yeah. All right, so let's talk about depth. Those are the two starters at tackle. Again, we're working outside in. Cam Williams, so far, is profiling as the third tackle. You're going to see Goosby, the true freshman, as the backup left tackle. I don't believe that's the case if there's an injury. But it is encouraging about Goosby, who has completely remade his body in a short few months since arriving on campus. Apparently, the coaches are very impressed with his athleticism and his motor, which is great in a left tackle. I love to hear that. I still think he's a little bit of a ways out, which is great because Kelvin Banks has two more years. Cam Williams, on a line of big humans, he is the most noticeably big human. And that dude's every bit of 6'5", 360. And he seems even bigger than 6'5". I honestly don't know how well he pass protects or pass blocks. All I know is if his feet are even decent, you're not going to be able to bull rush him. So all he has to worry about is you running around him. And he probably should be able to compensate. What do you think?
Yeah, he's harder to inside move, I think, than Jones, as big as Jones is. I thought Williams was actually pretty comfortable at Duncanville on the occasions when he did drop back in pass protect. I thought he looked reasonably natural at it. He seems like he's going to be like Orlando Brown or Phil Loadholt.
Yeah.
Or they just like to what to your point that you just said, the floor is so high because he's not unathletic and he's enormous. So what are you going to do with him? Right. If you're a defensive lineman, it's just your options are so limited.
I think he's a little stiff, and I think that'll get unlocked as he gets more strength and conditioning time. He needs to be able to play a little lower with a little bend just to compensate if he does encounter a good speed rusher. He needs to be able to move a little bit, but no one's bull rushing that dude. Good luck.
I found a clip that I put up the other day when I was writing on Alfred Collins, where they ran the ball at Collins. They doubled Collins with Jones and Cam Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And Collins was on his knees in like an instant with Cam Williams basically just standing over him. He is a load. He's going to play tackle. But if he devoted a lot of time to it, he could play guard.
Yeah, he could play either one. Yeah. And that's not surprising. I mean, do you have any doubt Kelvin Banks would be a great guard?
Well, to our earlier point, before he had strength, he probably wouldn't have stood out as much if he had to play guard.
I think just off of foot speed and agility and like aggression and technique, he would have been fine.
He would have been good, but you know, it wouldn't have been like, oh my gosh, this guy.
Yeah, you're right. My point is most talented tackles can play guard. Yeah. Very few guards can play tackle.
Yeah, or they would.
Or they would, yeah. All right, so that's tackle. I mean, at least the realistic depth chart that is likely to that we're going to see in any meaningful way. Let's work inside. So let's get to guard. You mentioned, we've got – go ahead.
There's a lot of intrigue here.
A lot of intrigue. We've got some real battles.
Yeah, sorry. Last year we were arguing in both of our pods on this about, is Hayden Connor just play left tackle? Like, can they really count on Banks to come in? Jones, can we count? You know, it was like this whole discussion of like, how do they find two starting tackles, much less back them up? And this year, it's not even a question.
And now it's a top five duo in the country.
Yeah. But guard, we didn't see that coming at all.
But guard okay. So let's talk about the competition. So let's go left to write. So we're going to start with Hayden Connor and the big battle with Natu Umeozolu. Nato Umeozolu. Here's the thing about Hayden Connor. People have to remember. I think because he committed early and he was on the Texas Recruitnik radar so early, there's a belief that Hayden Connor's like a fifth-year senior or something amongst the Longhorn fan base. He, in fact, started as a true sophomore last year, which is about 2 years earlier than you want to start an offensive lineman in a good program, right? And here's the truth about Hayden Connor. He didn't play well last year. On balance, he had, I would say, his lows as a offensive lineman were among the lowest lows of any offensive lineman on the team. Really struggled against Bama, if you watch that game, not just in pass protection, but as a run blocker. He was a big part of why we struggled to get Bijan established, not just Will Anderson pinching down and helping. And he struggles with being sticky. You know, I've mentioned this before, but when your offensive lineman fires out, you want them to get push. You want to get movement. If you can't get push or get movement, you want them to take turn aside. In other words, you want them to make the defender not have square shoulders. Like you may not move them, but you may turn them. The third thing that you want, failing those two things, is you may stalemate at the line of scrimmage, but at the very least, be sticky. Don't let the guy get off your block. Like, keep him occupied. There are plenty instances of big runs. Bijan Robinson's got plenty of in his film can of a bunch of offensive linemen neutralizing the guy in front of him, but there's no push. There's no real big hole. But Bijan gets small and just pops through because the defender was occupied, right? Connor wasn't staying sticky. He was firing out, making good contact, and then kind of just sloughing off, like just getting discarded, and then the guy would pursue. That has to improve, and I think it can improve. If it doesn't, they're ultimately going to have to replace him. And so the question is how quickly that happens, by what game, or conversely, could Connor just get better? And the answer is yes. Christian Jones went from below average to good. Why can't Hayden do the same?
Yeah, he has good feet, I think. Or at times he does. I think he's fairly athletic. I remember watching his junior film at Katie Taylor and thinking, this guy is actually more athletic and moves better than Bryce Foster, who was his teammate that went to, I think was maybe a five-star and went to Texas A&M. Then I revisited his senior film. And he may have had some injuries, I'm not sure. But he was bigger and he did not look as athletic. And I thought, oh no, this guy is A, trending the wrong direction, and B, now looks like a borderline Texas take. Then he came in as a freshman. And he didn't start, but he played a lot. And he looked really pretty promising. And I thought, okay, he's back on the junior trajectory. Comes back as a sophomore at Texas and was not that great last year, to your point. All the things you said. Then he has reportedly an amazing offseason. Has remade his body a lot. And I think he is in a legitimate battle for his job, but you probably wouldn't bet against him at this point, at least not for starting the beginning of the season. So he's had this very sporadic career, and I wonder how much of it is just something like having the right off-season strength and conditioning approach. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, his play seems to fluctuate with his body weight. And the heavier he gets, the less motor he exhibits.
So that could be to your point about stickiness.
Yeah.
Maybe that depends heavily on how much he's got in the tank.
Yep. The other part to strength and conditioning and body weight that people confuse, and unfortunately players confuse, and we'll cover this when we talk about the defensive line. Players think if I stop lifting heavy and just do body weight exercises and run, then I'll get quicker and lose weight.
Even I know that's not right.
That's right. So you lose weight based on how much you eat. Lifting heavy weights doesn't make you heavy. Like, there are gorgeous Olympic track athletes, women, pole vaulters, who you can Google, and they lift heavy weights. And they look that way, and they have a six-pack and, you know, great bodies because of what they eat. So I think that's something that we've seen that fallacy before, and we've seen Texas players decide to do that on their own. Keandre Coburn famously decided to do his own thing. Marquez Bemidge, you know, other guys. I don't want to go off on a tangent, but we've seen this where guys think they're going to, like, change their body. And you also see common comments from fans of, like, these guys need to stop lifting heavy weights and get lighter. And it's like, no. Like, getting lighter is, like, eat some salads and some meat and don't eat three desserts before you go to bed.
Texas once had a strength coach that seemed to believe in this fallacy. And you would not think that from looking at him. You know what I'm talking about?
Pat Moore?
No. This is a strength coach that looked like you should take all of his advice to heart.
Oh, Benny Wiley.
Benny Wiley, the current USC. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing with him. Supposedly he didn't like push heavy lifting and was, yeah.
Yeah. We saw some of those results. So look, here's the fundamental nature of the battle that's interesting to me. Do you alternate them early, even knowing you've got Alabama? Or do you want to stick with the more experienced guy and then sort of see? Or do you just want to say, hey, we're going to play both of these guys? Because that's not ideal for the offensive line. A lot of what you do is coherence and communication and continuity. So do you want to go 50-50 with these guys the first four games and figure it out? And then let the winner basically be the starter? And then it's 80-20 or 90-10 for the rest of the year? Or do you go with the guy you feel has the higher upside? Maybe it's Nato. Or do you go with the guy who you feel knows the playbook better because he's been around longer? He'll give you more floor. It's an interesting question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would lean towards play to win the game in front of you. Well, against Alabama, I would. So your question is tough. I mean, against Rice, they might as well rotate a lot. It's going to be like 150 degrees on the field. Like, you have every reason and every excuse to sub, to try out different things, see how guys look in an actual game. You feel bad for Rice because there's so many different positions across the entire team where you know they're going to do that, and they're going to see who has buy-in, and they're going to use that to make sure everybody plays that game the right way. And that's going to be make it harder for Rice to kind of, you know, surprise them with effort or whatever. Against Alabama on the road, man, unless I saw something that alarmed me or that really encouraged me against Rice, I think I would just play like Connor.
Okay.
And then maybe revisit it based on that result in the other games.
Understandable. We may have a different calculus on the other side. So now we're moving to the right side. We're going to skip over center and finish with that. That's our culminating position. Another battle at guard. So you'll read in a lot of preview and preseason magazines, including mine, that Texas returns 101 starts. But all those returning starts may not be starting next year. Yeah. And this is an example of it. We've got DJ Campbell. He was a much ballyhooed recruit. I think he was the number one interior offensive line recruit in the country. And comes in And he's battling Cole Hudson. Cole Hudson, by the way, is his peer in that recruiting group. Cole Hudson was an early enrollee. And much to that guy's credit, he came in as a true freshman. Cole Hudson was supposed to be the developmental guy, right? He's going to put in his time. He's going to be good, you know, good high school film, good program guy, great, you know, frame. He's going to get strong. He's going to learn the position, and he's going to be your fourth year starter as a junior, right? Well, Cole Hudson had other ideas. He came in and he won the job. And that says something about Cole Hudson. Also something says something about the options that we had. So this guy comes in as a true freshman, wins the gig. And Cole Hudson was up and down. Yeah, he had struggles, just like Hayden Connor. He's a true freshman starter. He also got a shoulder injury, a pretty serious shoulder injury, fairly early. He tore his labrum. He played through it. He opted to play through it. He could have stopped the season there and had surgery. But it was a pain tolerance injury. He wasn't going to make it much worse by playing through it. So he just opted to sort of be in pain and play through it. And so I think we have to be grateful for that, frankly. You know, don't be resentful of the true freshman who has to start, who's the best we have. He's out there giving his best, right? That was Hudson. I think Hudson, unfortunately, missed a whole offseason of strength and conditioning, or a good portion of it, because he had to get the surgery and then do rehab for his labrum. He's back. And the battle with DJ Campbell, it looks like DJ Campbell has edged him out.
Yep.
So let's talk about what DJ Campbell brings, because we haven't seen a ton of him. He played about 150 snaps last year. Maybe actually that's a good.
That sounds about right.
That's about right. Yeah. Thankfully I have this amazingly informative preview that this guy wrote. That's about right. So I don't really care what he did as a true freshman, sort of pressed into spot action. I care about his offseason development and what he's learned since then. And from what I've heard, I've not been able to put eyes on a practice, but from what I've heard from people who have gone to practice, you can hear DJ Campbell when he fires out on someone. And supposedly, it's not just that he's 340 pounds, he's also quick. Yeah. You know, over 5 to 10 yards, he's very good at combo blocking and then getting to the second level on a linebacker. So what could DJ Campbell bring to this offense that was lacking last year?
He's like the closest they've had to a Pouncey brother. Right?
Yeah.
He pop. He brings pop. He brings movement and inside zone.
Isn't that what people in Michigan call Coke?
Yeah.
Pap.
Pap.
I'll have a pap.
Yeah, I can't stand it. It makes more sense than calling everything Coke.
Yeah, I mean, that is weird that we call every soft drink Coke, and then they say, what kind of Coke? And you say Sprite.
That Midwestern accent just never sounds right.
No, it's tough, especially from a woman somehow. It's extra bad.
There's no way that what you're saying may make more sense than what we say somewhere else. But when I hear you say it, it just sounds like it can't be right.
That's right. So he does have pop, not soda water, but pop on the field. Why is that important, particularly Ian, if we're going to be in more 11 personnel?
You may have to explain that, because that's not obvious to me why it would matter more with 11 personnel. But I think they want to run more inside zone this year. And okay, I'll let you connect the dot later on that one. And inside zone is supposed to be the base of this offense. It's a very diverse playbook in terms of run schemes. It's the most diverse I've ever seen at Texas, by and far, I think. But inside zone is supposed to be the foundation. Be able to block inside zone against any front. Run home to mama. What do? We run inside zone. We can do that. And I think Cole Hudson is going to be very good at that as well eventually.
Yep.
With the injury and the lack of offseason development, and also just the fact that he's not a freak athlete like DJ Campbell, he's just not going to have the same impact on a combo block. And that also matters because the center has a lot of strengths, but pure strength is not one of them.
Yep.
So when you're combo blocking all the Big 12 is short on good defensive tackles, like true three technique tackles, but it has a lot of really stout nose tackles, and particularly this coming year, like a lot. And you want that guy that when he joins the combo block on the zero nose with Jake Majors, you get movement, or yep. you at least get him like under control. I was actually worried when I saw on the fall roster that he was listed at 343. I was like, this doesn't seem good. This makes me worried about whether he came into fall with the, I'm going to go win a starting job mindset. If he let himself get to 343. And then people were like, I don't know if he's actually 343 or not. Here's an Instagram post he did like a week ago. And he looks, if he's 343, he's carrying it very well. And then obviously fall camp, he's been terrific by every
report. I had the same reaction to that. I always look at the new updated heights, you know, weights and stuff. Yeah. And I saw 343 and I was like, oh man. Because I was hoping it was going to be 323. I saw that and I was like, this is no bueno. I saw Tavondre Sweat's weight and I was like, oh, that's not good. But apparently he's carrying it well. And if he is, do you remember the Ole Miss, or not Ole Miss, Mississippi State guard named Pork Chop?
No.
All right. They had a guard named Pork Chop at Mississippi State, because of course they did, right? That's pretty much guaranteed that you're going to have a player. Like, they used to have the guy named Pig in their secondary. I can't remember his last name, but they had a dude named Pig. Pork Chop Womack. So he was a dude that was an all SEC offensive lineman. He played in the NFL about 12 years. And Pork Chop Womack was just one of these dudes that was, I mean, he had to be 350. And he was quick. Like, in a small area, he was like shockingly fast. And it was kind of scary to see a big guy move that fast. And the hope is that Mr. Campbell is our Pork Chop Womack in that regard. Because a guy that big with that much mass and that much power who can move it quickly, you know, power is strength over time, right? It's strength over a time modality. So if you can move your big mass quick, you're actually much, much more powerful than a comparably sized guy who just moves a little slower. And it's not, and the difference is not arithmetic, right? You're not you don't hit 2% harder. You hit 25% harder than that other guy. And that's the crazy thing about football physics. So I'm hoping DJ Campbell is that guy. And the reason I kind of was bringing that up at 11 personnel, look, you want movement in any lineup, right? In 12 personnel and 13 and, you know, heavy extra sets where we bring out a jumbo tight end and extra offensive lineman and we line up in balance, right? You still want movement. But 11 and inside zone, if your passing attack is really going well and they have to play an honest box or even a light box, getting push inside on a relatively quick hitting inside zone, you don't just get good gains. You can seam people. And that's how you bust 70-yard runs.
Yep.
Because
– no, go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
If you don't have the extra blockers, that's fewer places to potentially punch a hole.
That's it. That's the other part. Is when you're in 12, you spread people out. Those two tight ends, you kind of spread them out a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, if they want to bring up an extra man, they want to do an opportune little blitz. They think they're going to catch you. It's second and two, and they think that's a passing down. And you just run inside zone, and you're outnumbered. But on the interior, often you're not outnumbered, right? And so if you can win one-on-one interior when they bring up an extra man, that's just a safety that's basically out of tackling ability, right? Who can't make a play now. So anyway, that's why getting a push inside, for all the reasons Ian mentioned, and I think also that one is important. You can't just stalemate inside there and have an effective inside zone running game.
Long story short, DJ Campbell is too talented not to play if he's at an acceptable level of assignment soundness.
That's the caveat. So we talked a little bit about what everyone can improve on. With DJ Campbell, given the importance of our passing offense and the importance of keeping 200-pound Quinn Ewers upright,
yeah,
if you give up a free shot inside because you're confused, not only is that a learning experience, but if you do it a couple of times, they'll just bench you and you can't play. You just can't play.
Yeah.
So those are the stakes for Mr. Campbell to get into his playbook. And I think he probably understands that.
I will say one last note on him, unless you have something else. When you watch DJ Campbell's 100 snaps or whatever last year, when he knows who to block, you see the talent.
Yeah.
Like he moves really well and he moves people. When he doesn't know who to block, it looks exactly like you think it does. It looks like him kind of looking around wildly and somebody like getting a free run at the quarterback or the running back or whatever.
Well, that's one thing offensive line coaches teach, which is know your assignment. But if you don't know your assignment, find someone to hit. You're not allowed to stand there confused. At minimum, like literally, I mean, I've given this instruction in flag football to 9-year-olds. If you don't know where to go, don't stand in the hole. You're actually blocking the hole. Like, go hit someone. Go double team the guy next to you. Go run down the field and find a safety. Like, get out of the way, and you're not allowed to stand there, no matter how confused you are. And so, you know, that's true at football at every level.
The really disciplined lines. Like, you'll see this all the time where a guy will miss his block and then you'll see him turn and look into the backfield and watch it. The really disciplined lines, the guys, if that happens, they don't turn back and look, or they only do it for like a split second before they're like looking like, well, if the quarterback or running back makes a miss, I'm going to make sure the next guy can't do it, you know?
Well, so to your point, Ian, all the time, you'll see a guy sprint through a hole. The running back is a better athlete than he is because he's a 310-pound defensive lineman. So yeah. Jonathan Brooks spins away from him, but your goofball offensive lineman is turned around, standing in the hole that guy just vacated.
Surrender Cobra. Yeah.
Surrender Cobra. And he now is preventing Jonathan Brooks from breaking a 25-yard run right through that vacated space. So yeah, it's something. The tough thing for that is it's human nature to turn around and be like, sorry, but you can't be. You just got to hope your dude makes a play. Yeah. Look out. Yeah. All right. So let's go into the interior. Let's talk about Jake Majors. Jake is a guy with 27 starts under his belt. There's been a bench Jake Majors movement going on for a while. Bobby and I were even talking about in the offseason. I was just like, I don't think Jake Majors is going anywhere. You know, I mean, if I start hearing in practice that he's second team and we've got, you know, Hayden Connor or Cole Hudson ahead of him, yeah, great. I'll listen to it then. But until then, I don't think we're sitting the guy because he's not perfect. And your point, you wrote a very good piece on this. And I think your point, if I may summate it overarching and correct me if I'm wrong, is we have other hierarchies of problem and need on the offensive line above Jake Majors to address.
Yep.
And by the way, we should be trying to address every position, right? If we can upgrade any position, upgrade it by all means. But the two guard positions were in more dire need of upgrade and play than center.
Yes. And then all the proposed solutions for replacing Jake Majors at center
would weaken guard.
And they inevitably involve guards who were worse than Jake Majors last year.
Yes.
Without having to snap the ball.
And would make the guard position worse. Probably, right? Or at least eliminate depth. So let's talk about Jake Majors. His strengths, he was a very good pass blocker on the interior. He knows where to go. He understands how to pass off. Go ahead.
Very sticky in pass protection.
He is sticky in pass protection. So he doesn't get run over. And he doesn't get run by, which is important. You don't want that from your center. And he's a good helper. So often, if your center is not covered in pass protection, meaning there's not a guy directly over him, he's kind of free. So you might have both your guards and both your tackles occupied one-on-one with pass rushers. And your center's free, so your center has to balance going to help a guy, but also you don't want to vacate that space in the middle too quickly, because a linebacker standing there on a delay blitz who you think is going to drop back into zone, he comes through that vacated space, and he's going to Dallas Turner your quarterback. So it's a tricky little feel thing that your center has to have, and Jake Majors has it. And you'll see our guards actually mess that up quite a bit. When they're uncovered, they'll go help sometimes too quickly, and then you'll see a TCU blitz D winners through that space and destroy our offense. So that's a strength. He's a good pass protector. He's Johnny on the spot. I think he's a good communicator. He's a smart guy. He's pretty mobile. So, in some formations, we'll actually pull Jake Majors, and he's an effective puller. Not a lot of centers can pull that off, but he can. The weakness, maybe overdone, maybe not overdone, I don't know, depending on your perspective. He doesn't get push in the running game. He just, you know, some people are like, oh, he gets dominated by nose tackles. Well, not really, but he doesn't get push, and right. That's a problem. And he doesn't get pushed sometimes with a double team. And that's a real problem, right? Because then the defense is winning.
So that's probably the thing to watch, right?
Yep.
When he goes up against, certainly against Alabama, although that's not the most fair barometer, right? When they double with him and Hayden Connor on big Jaheim Otis for Alabama, what happens?
Quick timeout on Otis. He's going to be an All-American nose tackle.
He's very good.
So Texas fans, if that guy makes a couple of plays in the game, don't get all freaked out and, oh, Jake Majors. The guy is going to be an All-American, and he's going to play in the NFL for 10 years. So just continuing.
Yeah, if Alabama's in the playoffs, that's wise that they finally have that again. They haven't had that in a while at that position. There or maybe against another team. What happens when basically do they get more movement from double teams with Jake Majors?
Yes.
How much of that was Jake Majors just isn't strong enough? And how much of that was the timing and the placement with his combo block with last year's Hayden Connor versus this year's Hayden Connor, injured Cole Hudson versus DJ Campbell? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I don't know. He's not a powerful guy, but I wonder if those combo blocks get significantly better, if that makes the difference.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Who's going to back him up? Do you think it's going to be Connor Robertson or Cole Hudson?
Or it could be Hayden Connor, right? It sounds like he's still getting snaps there.
I just think that's emergency stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you have the worst run of luck pass possible. We need at least a third string guy who can snap the ball, right?
I think it'll be Cole Hudson unless snapping is not something that is coming quickly to him.
Yeah.
Because I think for a couple of reasons. One, Cole Hudson is a better player currently than Connor Robertson, who also missed a lot of offseason strength work for, I think, the same injury maybe or something like that. Secondly, you want to keep Cole Hudson really engaged, because it kind of sucks. Like, hey, I know you played injured for us as a freshman, but off to the bench with you, you know?
Well, so I do think Cole Hudson is going to be our number one sub at two positions.
Yeah.
And I think that'll keep him busy and engaged. And also, you know, like, this is the season, and guys in sports understand hierarchies. And if DJ Campbell goes out there and kicks ass, it's not like Cole Hudson's going to be moping around about it. He understands. Right. And he's got plenty of eligibility left. So right. I think people overdo that. And sometimes they see things through the recruiting prism. of, you know, you're required to play all these guys because it's, you could sell that to recruits. And it's like, man, but it's a season in the offensive line. Like, you want continuity and you want the same dudes out there 90% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but I mean, you're right. But I think it helps keep him engaged and just, I think you want to find ways for him to get back on the field if somebody, either someone gets hurt or if he just keeps getting better and you're
agreed.
Like,
oh, you want, yeah, I think that's fair. Well, and he's going to be one of our eight. We're going to have eight dudes that we want to play. And that's why we're not going to do an exhaustive discussion about every offensive lineman. You know, I'm happy to talk about Jaden Chapman, but I don't think he's going to be particularly relevant to this season.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Mr. Chapman.
Have we hit all eight, or is there, I can think of one more guy that we should maybe talk about.
Malik Ogbo.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep. I was saving that. So Texas, particularly with Steve Sarkisian, does like to use that extra six offensive lineman or slash jumbo tight end. I don't want to get into all the eligibility of a tight end, but sometimes you need to have a certain number to be out there if you're not in a certain formation to have Carriage that alignment.
Carriage would wear 92 when he did that.
Yes. So I think they're trying to find a guy they can use at that position who they won't have to worry about doing a jersey scramble. Mm-hmm. Right? Can you imagine trying to get Cam Williams' jersey off and a new jersey on him? Like, there's a reason they put that jersey on his pads before he puts it on, right? So, and they keep those jerseys super tight as an offensive lineman, obviously, because you don't want defenders to be able to grasp your jersey and control you, right? Get purchase with their hands. Mm. So they're looking at Malik Ogbo. How often are we going to use this look? Are we looking to just run down people's throats? Or is this just going to be one of our change-ups against certain opponents?
I mean, probably more the latter, because they have a really good blocking tight end in Gunnar Helm. But I mean, even they may use it every game in goal line. There's probably some games where it's like, we're going to do this a lot this week. But yeah. In some games, probably not, except for goal line. You know what else about him in that position, other than easily getting the jersey off and on, is he's cut from, like, I think he came in at like 350 and he cut way down to like 280, 290 or something.
And now he's back up to 300 or something?
No. And I think what I'd heard was he's lost a little bit of the pop.
Yeah, I could see that.
But his feet are great, and he needs to rebuild some strength and power and mass in that. But on the perimeter as a sixth line, as a tackle, or sorry, as a tight end, that doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, so he's listed at 6'4", 294.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that makes sense. That checks out.
But he's quick. It's like Carriage. This is exactly what it was. Carriage was a little bit light, but he was a really good pass protector, especially for like a tight end. Maybe not for like a left tackle, but way above average for tight end. He could execute all the mobile blocks that you would want a tight end to execute. And just bring more thunder when he did it.
Yep.
So you took Carriage or Ogbo. They go from being a guy that's going to catch scorn like Jake Majors, like an undersized, underpowered offensive lineman, to an overpowered tight end.
Yeah, and there are positional fits that can change from college to NFL, right? Based on your traits. You know, do you know what Connor Williams is playing in the NFL now?
I thought it was like left guard.
He plays center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the starting center for the Dolphins.
Huh.
And they really like him there.
I mean, I'm not shocked, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not shocked either. So, yeah, he had been playing guard for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I would see Cowboys fans complaining about him on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I think he's going to be very good at center. So yeah. Cool. Interesting.
There you go, Connor.
Yeah, and yeah, you never know. Like we talked about this with Ryan Watts in the DB podcast. Maybe he plays NFL safety. And you just never know. The games are a little different in how pieces fit. So, all right, that's the Texas offensive line. Not to be dramatic, but other than quarterback, at least with respect to the offense, I can't think of a group more important to the offensive floor or ceiling for Texas, because I'm pretty sold on the wide receiver group. I'm not worried about them. I don't lose a lot of sleep about our wide receivers. And I think our running backs will be anywhere from serviceable to good. So to me, it's about the play of Quinn Ewers and his ability to just distribute the ball capably. And then our offensive line, specifically the interior of the offensive line, to level up. And if those things can happen, Texas won't just have a good offense. They could have a potentially scary offense. But if they don't level up, they're going to have an offense that can hit a brick wall against higher level defenses. I'm not saying that they're going to be rendered ineffective. I'm just saying you're going to see the slope drop off.
Yeah, I think Texas is on the cusp of having the kind of offensive line that just dominates certainly Big 12 games. And I don't know if they're going to quite get there in 23 or not. It depends probably on did Hayden, it's guards. Did Hayden Connor remake his, is he going to make a leap? All the things he did in the offseason to get better, is that going to work? Can DJ Campbell translate his talent in year two? And if Kelvin Biggs keeps getting stronger, those three things happen, and Jones and Majors are just the same guys we've seen, they will dominate games.
Yeah.
If they don't get all of those, or they don't, you know, they don't quite solve for those, then they're going to be a very good offense, but they won't quite get there to that like 2006 kind of level.
Well, I want to talk about a 2006 level mortgage broker. And by that, I'm talking about Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. You guys might have noticed that interest rates are a tad high at the moment. Now more than ever, you need to get the right guy in your corner for what is the most important single financial decision that 98% of us will make in our lives, buying a house. Look, you can call your bank and use their guy, God help you, or you can go to a guy who's been in the industry for 20 years, who is much sharper, much more responsive, a guy who's solving problems at 1 a.m. if he needs to make sure that you get your house when you think you need to get your house. He's also not just a quote rate monkey. He's a guy you can call and craft a very specific plan for you, particularly if you're not just your traditional W-2 income guy. There's a lot of people with small businesses. There's a lot of people with irregular income. And actually, it could be very difficult for them to buy a house. So a guy like Gabe understands the rules. He understands the principles behind those rules, and he knows how to work it. So give him a call and find out why so many of our listeners love Gabe and absolutely rave about him. The reality is he's just phenomenal at what he does. He's an awesome dude. So give him a call, 832-557-1095. If you need a guy equally awesome in his field, that's David McClellan. David is a former multi-national championship swimmer at the University of Texas. He's also one of the sharpest cats that you'll ever talk to. And anytime I talk to David, I learn something. And he has the heart of a teacher. There's a lot of guys that can be pretty sharp at finance. There's not a small number of financial advisors who are effectively salespeople. There's a much smaller group that really wants to teach you about how to manage your money and how to look at this in a broader perspective. That's David McClellan. You'll get his contact info at the end of this podcast. Reach out to him, 30-minute free consultation. You certainly have nothing to lose, and he's not going to put you on some Nigerian email chain and bother you. He just wants to talk to you, help you out, and see if there's a fit that you guys could work together. And if not, you'll probably BS about Longhorn Sports and have a good conversation. So give these folks a call. Give them your support. And finally, last but not least, Laura Baker, great Centex realtor. Give her a call. She's in the top 10% at what she does in Central Texas, and that's absolutely vital, whether you're selling or buying. She's an award-winning member of the Andy Allen team from Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Ian, do you have anything you want to plug? Anything you want to talk about? Maybe another place that you write other than Inside Texas?
Yeah, people should check out America's War Game. It's my Substack. I've been breaking down nationally the teams that I think are serious contenders to make the playoffs. That's kind of how I try to cover national college football there. I talk a little bit on the social cultural side of it. I talk about X's and O's. And I try to, it's such a big, broad, expansive topic. I tend to talk about like playoff relevance as a guiding for, and I'll go off and talk for a minute about could Utah win the Big 12 when everybody's gone or things like that, that interest me. But I try to stay a lot on playoff relevance just because it's the most like universal. And there's still a lot of teams and a lot of information that's getting covered. So if you're into broader college football or some of these SEC relevant SEC teams that Texas will be playing in the future seasons, then come on over because I'm breaking them down.
And where can they find you?
What, sorry, what?
Where can they find that?
AmericasWarGame.substack.com, something like that. Text America's War Game Substack, you'll find it.
All right, Google search some of those terms and it'll pop up. You'll recognize it. All right, Ian, hey, it's been a pleasure. We've got one, well, maybe two more of these to record. We're thinking about doing a special reward podcast where Ian picks the OU schedule, which we'll make sure to circulate all through the OU internets. That might be a lot of fun. But I think we got one more to cover with the defensive line. Actually, it depends on which order I release this in. So we really appreciate y'all joining on this journey. I've enjoyed the comments on Inside Texas. And for those of you who are listening and not on Inside Texas, what are you doing? Join. You can pay $1, read it for a month, figure out if it's a good fit. If it's not a good fit for you, you have my blessings to move on. I think if you like this podcast, you're going to like Inside Texas. So please support our sponsors. Support our friend Ian Boyd. Support Inside Texas, where you can find the murderer's row of Texas Longhorn writers and analysts. And most of all, we're just a few days out from actual football, folks. So we're fired up. For Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous. And now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. And you can reach him at 832-557-1095. Or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years. And he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper-competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.